Welcome to Biggest Geekus. We are your hosts. I am Joe.
I'm Randy.
This is episode 47 of our podcast, and the date is Wednesday, July 28th, 2021.
Sweet.
We did actually get, considering the time-related hijinks that we played over the last couple of weeks, we did get some extra call-ins that we can play. We can do that. How are things going, gaming wise?
Pretty good.
Oh yeah, good. You played last week.
I did. Are we gonna talk about that, or we gonna do call ins first?
Yeah, let's do call ins.
All right, I'll tell you all about that.
I believe I got these right, because they're all talking about usage dice like we were talking about. So
yeah, I got a message from Taylor. Is this Taylor talking in this one?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he messaged me on the Facebook and said he had some. I didn't get a chance to get back to him, but that's cool. Looking forward to hearing it.
Good morning. This is Taylor, Clericsware Ringmail, calling in about usage dice. Now, in previous calls, I think we have already established that I enjoy counting beans. Resource management is key to my enjoyment of the game. Arrows, like I think Joe mentioned, it's very easy to track those things. Truthfully, I just take toothpicks and put them in a shot glass and then remove and add as needed. The toothpick approach has an added bonus, too, because I can huck them at my friends. Face-to-face gaming. But so usage dice, to speak to the purpose of the call, I don't like usage dice on principle because they trivialize the resource management aspect. However, in two cases, as of late, I've heard a good argument where they can be incorporated into a proper resource-managed game.
This sounds interesting.
Humorously, the first use case is ammunition. Now, this is not because, being forced online to game, I am unable to huck my aforementioned toothpicks, but instead because of the abstract combat round. We are told over and over in DMGs that a roll to hit doesn't necessarily reflect a single swing of your sword. Instead, it's feinting and moving and multiple strikes, and whether you hit or not is whether you were able to score a telling blow. As such, why is shooting an arrow exactly one arrow? Why wouldn't you be able to dodge back and forth, put multiple arrows downfield? And so the usage die in terms of ammunition becomes a way to abstract that you may not fire once per round. You may have fired three times or maybe zero. Who knows?
You know, it's something interesting that he came to my mind when you said that, Taylor. I think in Savage Worlds, when you auto fire or fire something that has a rate of fire more than one, you lose multiples of bullets. So if you fire two, if you have a rate of fire of two, I think you lose five bullets, not two bullets.
Right.
And if you have three, you lose 10. So, and the it goes up, not necessarily that pace, but it does go up. So it's interesting that's an interesting way to do a usage die. If your combat round's a full minute, like it was in older D&D.
Right. The shorter the combat round gets, the less I buy the dodging and weaving and getting in the telling blow.
Because I don't think in third edition and beyond, combat round became 6 seconds.
Yeah. So 6 seconds, having sparred in martial arts training, 6 seconds is quite a bit of time to get a hold or a blow in or something like that. But it's nothing like a minute. After a minute of martial arts sparring, I was always really sweaty and winded.
Right.
The other use case, controversially, hit points. I read about this on the Goblin's Henchman blog. I will try to send you guys a link in one of the social media outlets we share. But essentially, instead of having a pool of hit points, you have a usage die based on your class and level, which you, the player, would roll when normally your character would take damage. I like it because it keeps your class and level relevant, so the barbarian is going to have more hit points than the wizard, but it also puts the defense in the hands of the player. It provides an active defense as opposed to AC and HP, which is one-sided. Only the attacker plays the active role, and the defender merely notes damage as it occurs. Goblin's henchman did do some math and looks to have honed it to compare to AD&D, but math notwithstanding, interesting idea. Interested to hear your thoughts.
Huh.
That's okay. After reading Hackmaster, one of the more recent versions, they have the defender. There's not an armor class. The attacker attacks, the defender defends. It's active, so you roll a die. So the attacker attack. I can't remember precisely how it works, but essentially, it's opposed roles.
Mm-hmm.
And which I like kind of better than just what seems to be from the way the procedure works in most games is you just stand there and you take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the way he's describing, Taylor's describing it, is it like, did I understand it correctly? Did you hear this? So they roll to hit, and if they hit you, you roll a usage die to see
essentially
hit points.
Yeah.
So maybe some. I need to read that. He sent that to me like last week. I need to read that because I mean, it's interesting that he says it because I don't know if you've seen the most. I think it's the most recent Professor Dungeon Master Dungeoncraft. He talked about using basically a die type for your class instead of as proficiency. So your proficiency goes up by level, D4, D6, D12, and you roll those instead of static skill checks. Charisma plus the D12, charisma plus a D8.
That would solve the whole low-level folks are just as competent at things with little experience as opposed to experienced characters. They'll have a bigger die type and... Mm-hmm. That's if you're going to play for the edition, that might be a good solution to how they handle
it. So I'm sorry, Taylor, I did not read that, but I need to. So it sounds interesting. I'm not sure if I would like it. I'm also not particularly a fan of defensive roles. So
I know why, because it seems it would slow the game down.
Right.
Plus, it would take the wind out of the sails of anybody could if they rolled a natural 20 or something like that. So, but I kind of like it. To me, it represents combat a little more dynamically.
Yeah.
Maybe cinematically. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so.
But as far as you should die once we read the article, which I didn't either because I'm lazy.
I've been a bad boy, yeah. So.
Also, I had to get my wife on the plane, so I've had a really hot couple of last couple of days.
Yeah, we had a tough things too at home. So sorry about that, Taylor. We'll get to that, and I'll comment more next time. I'm going to read it. That's a cool idea to think about.
This can is being kicked to the next episode.
Yes.
Hey guys, it's Johnny from the Red Dice Stories, just listening to your How Do You Roll episode. And I heard you mention Baromaze and the difficulties of getting hold of a copy. Well, currently you can get hold of a print-on-demand black and white copy on DriveThruRPG for about $72 US, I think it is. Nothing more profound to say than that. Just wanted to drop you a message in case you're unaware of that. Anyway, I'm going to get back to listening to the episode, guys. Keep up the good work. Catch you soon.
Do you think that would be worth it?
Dude, I've heard books. That's a lot, but I spent more than that on some books, and I've heard nothing but good things about Barrel Maze. But I'm not sure if the big dungeon, it's not really been my bag in years and years. So, yeah, I appreciate that, John. I hadn't thought about print on demand. I don't know why. That's weird.
I'm not sure. I can't even remember the page count on that. So it might be worth it just from the density of the material.
Oh, I'm sure it is. 72 is probably a bargain. So
I have to look into that.
Yeah.
More from John.
All right.
Hey guys, it's John here. You asked for some sort of information on Hex Crawl, so I thought I'd call in. Yeah, as you rightly say, my Smoke and Snow campaign is a hex crawl. And the idea is that, again, as you guys rightly say, eventually they'll sort of segue into more of the sort of like domain style of game, where at the minute the players are basically settlers. They've got a small village. As they're slowly clearing out these hexes, this wilderness area around their village, there will come a point where they're going to be like the lords of that domain. And then although they'll still be doing the normal dungeon crawling and stuff like that, because there's dungeons and stuff dotted about all over the place and lairs and whatnot, although they'll still be doing that, they'll also be sort of like in the background, like managing their domain. Although I'm not really going to go into like heavy sort of crunch rules territory with that. I've sort of clutched together a few different ideas from different books, including the excellent book Into the Wild, which goes into like details about managing a domain, although I vastly simplified it down in the version we're going to be using in my game, because my players were like, oh yeah, we don't really want to get into that high complex sort of domain ruling. We still want the game to be about the fun adventuring, which I entirely understand, and I think it's probably a good idea as a GM just to like check that your players are down with that sort of thing before you like shift the focus of the game. So that's what we're going for. In terms of the prep, I think mainly with a sort of hex crawl, you just sort of shift where your prep happens, so you can do a lot more sort of stuff in the background. You don't have to sort of have it all immediately available. I mean, you can quite easily start off a campaign with just like a few hexes around their home base, sort of populated with a couple of lairs and dungeons and some rumors, and you can run it like that for a good few sessions, depending on how quickly your group sort of churn their way through the hexes. And all I do is, as you guys were suggesting, is when we get to the end of a session, I get an idea from the players as to what direction they want to head in, what they want to investigate the session afterwards. Then I can make sure I've got like my prep all done for that. And occasionally when I've got a bit of spare time, I'll just have a look at the map and I'll maybe like drop a few little things onto my GM map so that when the player characters wander over in that direction, I've got an idea of what's there and I've got a little bit of that prep done. But it does mean I don't have to have it all done in a one-up, which is a great thing for me. And it frees me up to like focus on the bits that I find most interesting at the time. So anyway, that's a few things I do during when I'm running my hex crawls. If you want to learn any more, just give us a shout. I'm always happy to chat about hex crawls and old school gaming. Anyway, I'm enjoying the episode, guys. I'm going to get back to it. Take care.
So that's interesting, John. So when he says prepare a few dungeon and a few hexes around the home base, that sounds like a lot of work from my viewpoint. Am I misinterpreting something?
Well, it depends on how big the dungeons are and how much prep he's talking. If he's just talking about here's a dungeon here, and maybe he's pre-rolled some things on some random tables and knows it like X, Y, and Z high concept things
about right.
those pre-prepared to a degree things, probably don't need to figure out what's under every rock.
Yeah, and I guess if you have a few dungeons, you could be like, and then me, I love using modules. I'm going to use this chunk of the module here, this chunk of a module here, this chunk of a different module here. And right. you could have, you know, like, I'm just going to skim them all. But if they go, I'm going to thinking they're going this way, so I'll kind of really know this one. If they go to another ones, I'll have to just kind of, you know, wing it a little bit.
Yeah, again, it's you're risking the Omega ogre. Is that quantum ogre?
Quantum ogre.
Where, yeah, and I think they didn't go there, but I really want to use that dungeon, so I'm going to throw it over here in their way instead.
I wonder if John actually. So how much does he prep? So let's say he starts. He's going to start his hex crawl, and they start at town X. How much do you prep, John? I mean, and I know we've talked. I've heard you talk. You sound like you put a lot of time in, like I do. So you have no idea where they're going at the start, or do you kind of lay something out first, like I had thought about? I talked about
that. Yeah, last I think that's what he was talking about. You lay something out first, and then at the end okay. of the session, you find out where what your group's intentions are going forward. That way,
Cool. Get back with us, John, if you have more things to add. I think that would be nice to hear.
Especially when it comes to how much. The individual items, how much prep goes into that? Yeah, because if you prep 2-3 dungeons, I mean, they can't be that big.
No.
But you never know.
That's true. Good prep Marrow Maze and Rapanathuke all in one weekend.
Sure, sure. And then when they go the other direction and don't do either, you pull out your gun.
Yeah, correct. No food for you.
None. All right. Thank you, John. Moving on to Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, guys. Sorry for taking so long to call in on your resource management episode. I listened when it came out, and then I meant to call in and forgot to and got caught up doing other things. Anyhow, as far as rifts go, yeah, I've played both the original. We played back in the Army in the 90s and then Savage Worlds. You know, I don't know. It pushes Savage Worlds. It adds about as much complication as I think Savage Worlds can handle on it. It's about as a heavy version of Savage Worlds as I would want, to be honest. Not that the original system worked great, but I think it worked well enough if you kind of squinted and looked past it, like all the Palladium games. One thing you didn't mention is it kind of, I think it was kind of an outgrowth from the old After the Bomb setting for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Didn't that come out first, and that was kind of like the prototype riffs?
I don't know the history on that.
I don't know either, but I agree with you. I think riffs straps on so much stuff to a Savage Worlds character. It's pushing the, I mean, a really new player playing riffs with Savage Worlds has got a lot to keep track of.
Well, also that if you go to a different different Savage Worlds setup, mm-hmm. a new player whose only experience with Savage Worlds is riffs will say, "Holy crap, these guys aren't that powerful.
They're weak."
Yeah,
Someone like Joe, first time he played, thought, "Man, these guys are weak," because he wants to play 30th level wizards to start with and go up from there.
I'm not wrong.
Or at least the prototype for the Coalition. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, Rifts is definitely it's probably a large for me, to be honest. My favorite, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, of course, played that. All the Game Worlds Palladium did are great, but Palladium Fantasy is probably my famous, and I think it's still very playable. Now, you mentioned second editions. Yeah, Rift came out with that, the Ultimate Edition or whatever, but now they did do second editions for some games, like Palladium Fantasy, and I think Heroes Unlimited got a second edition. Beyond the Supernatural got a second edition. But, yeah, I don't think Rifts did. They had to update the other books to go with Rifts because they had to add Mega Damage and all that kind of thing to the... Well, not necessarily Mega Damage, but they had to make them so they'd be more compatible with Rifts. But, yeah, Rifts is an interesting setting. It definitely takes the right group and the right mindset to play it. But I think you can do some neat things in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some friends that were big Palladium Fantasy first edition fans. Joe says he liked it a little bit what he read, maybe it was second edition, but they like first edition better. And second edition, I think you're right, became more in line with Rifts. They might even have Mega Damage in there. I don't know.
Yeah, there's also ways for you to cross over. I think, did he mention that? You can just jump in to a Rift and you can go from any of their settings to any of their other settings, essentially.
Which is, they have a way to do that in Savage Worlds, too. So if you're playing, a Rippers, you can jump in, and then Rifts, be a scientist to jump over, or Deadlands, Gunslinger. Yeah.
As far as your resource management discussion, I think it was interesting. No real heavy comments on that, because you guys have to decide what, every group has to decide how much of that they want to do, right? But I will talk about usage dice for a minute. So usage dice, like Black Hack style, what you do is you'll have X amount of whatever it is. The usage die will start a certain size. And then if you roll a 1 or a 2 on the usage dice, then it goes to the next smaller size. So if you have a D8 usage die, roll 1 or 2, then it goes down to a D6. So that's how those work. And where I like to use usage die isn't so much beans and bullets and things like that. I like to use it for durations and for things like that. So the idea would be you cast a spell. How long is the spell going to last, or how long is that web spell going to stay up? Well, you put a usage die on it, and I think that makes it really interesting.
What do you think of that, Joe?
I don't.
You don't think?
I'll try not to.
You want to know how long your spell's going to last, huh?
Well, so it depends on what the spread is. So, if it'd be anything from one round to 100 rounds, no, right. That sounds right. Weird. But if it's more of a tight spread, then it might be okay.
What if it was 3 rounds plus a D6?
Depending on
the spell.
I, as the caster and the player, know how long that it is instead of the old fly spell where you really weren't sure exactly how long it was going to last.
So you wouldn't, if you put up a wall of force and it was like 10 rounds plus a D8, you want to roll the D8 and know what it is.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, that's just, I mean, if you have if your game world lore is that magic is, you'd have to say that it's not as reliable, because that to me sounds like it's unreliable. You don't know how long. It could last a long time. It could last a short time.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking too, once your game world, I'm thinking mechanics and Mudsword. I'm thinking, you had mentioned this a long time ago, at least to me, I think I have to think of a setting. I don't think we're going to pick and choose these mechanics for D&D. I don't think I want to make a generic D&D game.
Because there would be too many different things.
Yes.
You could have this. You could have that. You could have
it. Wouldn't have to. We might enjoy it, but it's like, you know, I kind of want a game that, I mean, it's not going to be consistent. And I'd like to have something that's a little more believable. And I think we may have to do setting first. Mudsword, the world of Mudsword.
That would be interesting to do.
Yep.
And if you do the world first,
yep,
then you can adapt rules to it, even if it's Savage Worlds or
something
else.
Yep, agreed.
Of course, it doesn't have to be spells, but the idea of if you have something with kind of variable effect or you're not really sure how much is left, that's where the usage dice really come in. Into their own, so something like that, you know, spell duration, and then of course your longer lasting spells would have a higher usage die, but that, yeah, I really like that kind of use of the usage die as far as how many arrows you have left. Now, I mean, it's easy just to tick off the arrows, to be honest. I don't really see the need for it that way.
I agree, it is probably easier with, I think it is the most resources to just resource manage, just do the accountant approach.
Yeah, just tick it off.
The idea of a usage die is intriguing. I think now the game DCC might benefit from some random spell duration, which the wizard doesn't know. That would probably go right along with the feel.
It probably would.
So
it's a different magic feel there. Different. Yeah.
Magic is dangerous and you can't control it. Yep.
Right. As far as, I think I mentioned this in the last episode, I really don't get why people are so hung up about not wanting to keep track of the things that are on their sheet. No, it's kind of weird.
It is weird. Dude, you're playing that dude, right? You want to know what he's got.
Yeah. Anyhow, great show. Oh, last thing I'll mention in your response, kind of my calls for Mudsword, using DCs the way you described them, and again, I haven't looked at 13th Age, although I will look at 13th Age because I just bought the Humble Bundle that's out there for 13th Age. So I wonder if I already had 13th Age. Oh, well, either way, I just bought the Humble Bundle. But regardless of that, so I will look at it, but usage dice, or not usage die, setting DCs like that where it's just an easy medium or hard, whatever, and you're not just coming up with random numbers off, not random, but you're not having to come number off the top of your head, but it's like a set, you know, like that, I think is fine and easier, and I don't have a big problem with that. Where I have the problem is where it's kind of wide open and you're kind of trying to noodle down, well, which is it?
Yeah, I mean, third edition suffered from that, and like DCs were all over the place. I mean, they had these guidelines, and they were super loose, so DMs could do whatever they want. What's the DC check for that jump? 36. I'm second level, dude. Yeah, but you got plus 20 because you're playing Pathfinder. Not true.
I just want to turn the knob on the door.
No, too hard. Yeah, I feel you, Jason. And dude, good deal on that Humble Bundle. I saw it. If I didn't have everything, that would be quite a steal. So
I've got a lot of 13th Age stuff too. So
yeah, I got all that I need, I think.
But yeah, the 13th Age one, at least the way you described it, sounds perfectly fine. And yeah, role-playing games, of course, there's tons of arbitrary stuff in there. I mean, it's not that I don't like arbitrary stuff. It's just one of those things that, well, how hard is it for me to climb this rope? And then you use a GM because you weren't thinking about that before. Like, where, like, say, the method you're talking about, oh, it's medium, so it's 14 or, you know, whatever medium is. So that's cool. I'm down with that. So, yeah, sounds good. Okay, guys, short calls this week. Hang in there. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, Jason, I get it. I mean, arbitrary is the name of the game, right? You just build a game, whatever you decide you like, and why do you like it, go and do it. Oh, by the way, Joe, did you listen to his – I'm catching up on some of Jason's podcasts. Boy, they got quite a discussion on Rule Zero.
No, actually, I haven't.
You need – if you get a chance.
Every time I get caught up, I, like, blink my eye, and then – you know, there's 10 episodes that I have.
To Jason's awesome, man. He is a speed demon. Him and Tink are both, and Glenn, they get that stuff out quick.
Right. So, yeah. The other, I think another way that some people want to handle DCs and even resource management is it's only relevant if there's some dramatic or story reason for it to be. So, so I get that, but I also think it's a little too loose.
Soft.
It's
probably, soft.
Probably.
And they don't want to worry about it. That's, but you know what?
That's a play style.
Yeah, it's a play style, dude. If you don't want to worry about it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't
worry about
you
it.
You don't have to. You don't have to play like us. You should.
You can play the wrong way. It's okay.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of playing the wrong way,
yeah.
Hey there, guys, still listening to your How Do You Roll episode, very much enjoying it, and I've got to say, yeah, I love getting elements of sort of ostensibly sci-fi and like spaceships and stuff like that into D&D. In fact, if you're in a campaign that I'm running and there's not some sort of like science fantasy element that creeps in, you might want to come over and check my pulse. Anyway, enjoying the episode, guys. Gonna get back to it. Take it easy.
Yeah, John likes spaceships, dude.
Yeah, I know. Randy does wants as little of that in his fantasy game as possible.
He does, but you know, then again, I do have Goodman's Games, Expedition to the Barrier Peaks Reincarnated. So, what does that say?
Yeah,
I'm a collector.
I think if it's a light touch, it's just fine. Or I don't know if they've played this, or I can't remember if I said it for his Red Dice Diaries podcast. Imagine the bad guy, because we all imagine if our characters found the spaceship, how would we react? But what about if the bad guy found the spaceship?
Oh, yeah.
And he was trying to figure it out, and so a lot of his figuring out issues ended up like, oh, he accidentally set off this really awful laser beam that annihilated the nearby village or something like that. So,
or set off a very slow self-destruct that would be a 50 megaton nuclear explosion. Yeah,
in the last fight, you'd say, okay, you got me. But there's this thing behind me that I can't figure out. And I think we're all.
I don't think it's good. These numbers keep going down, you know. I think this is bad.
So that could be an easy way for the big bad evil guy, when he's down to one hit point, say, ooh.
Yeah. Might give up.
I give up, and we're all going to die unless you figure it out.
Right. See ya. That is cool. Yeah. And, you know, to give a nod to John, the way he likes to play, that's kind of how the old game was. There was a little bit of science fantasy in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it has, you know, the game has its roots in something like John Carter of Mars, which is basically a science fantasy.
Oh, sure it is. Yeah.
I mean, there's tech in it, but it's the light touch. Yeah. The whole idea of how he got to Mars, spoilers, don't know if it's science-based or supernatural.
Right.
Kind of left open.
He tries to explain some things in scientific terms, and other times it's like,
and Signs of the Time, which was kind of different.
Great. Yeah.
Well, now it's outdated, but it's still interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you, callers.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Very cool.
We really appreciate
it. And don't worry, Taylor. We will get to your hit point usage die. I'm going to read that thing, and I'm going to have comments next time.
Yes. Thank you for padding our podcast and making it longer for us.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So positive material playing.
Yeah, dude. You
played last week.
I did. I played Deadlands, and I played 13th Age, sucker.
You didn't say anything about two games.
Yeah.
Oh, you're holding out.
I am holding out. So the Deadlands thing was pretty good. We played two of the three adventures. We had a really good time, I think. Broke for dinner. Josh, our buddy, we had a birthday, and that's how we celebrated. So we had a big Deadlands night. Also ran a short 13th Age scenario connected to our cabin con thing, protecting the egg. Joe will know what that one I'm talking about when I say protecting the egg, and extended on. And we didn't get quite as far as I thought, but that's okay because that gives me. I think I'm going to run that scenario again. Probably get Joseph in there, let him play it, and then I'm going to run it another sequel to that probably a few months down the line. I don't want to do this too much outside of cabin con, so we can have a place to begin at cabin con next year. So
did they get
have your character? Eggs? What's that?
Did you get off the planet with an egg?
Interesting that you said that. That is a very interesting statement. So anyway, we'll leave it at that. John might appreciate that scenario. So anyway.
Well, see, dude, it's a one shot. So what's the harm in saying it?
Dude, well, and here's the thing. And you guys are seventh level. So I'm going to run at least one more session, at least a couple of times. So two different sort of adventures and then get you guys at a certain spot so I can pick it up at Cabin Con.
Okay.
So that's the plan. Yeah, I think two. Maybe I'll do three. We'll see. See what I feel like doing. If I'm highly motivated, we'll play the whole dang thing through and then we'll pick up somewhere else at Cabin Con. So.
You're wanting to hide the details so that no one knows what's going on.
Yes, precious. And I don't want you to know. You're not playing it.
I've played in the
Oh, you mean the details about the egg? I'm not trying to be. Oh, no. So in this campaign, yeah, I mean, I could tell the people this egg in 13th Age is a potential.
Oh, that egg.
Yeah. Remember the one you were guarding at the end?
I was getting myself confused. Yes.
Prison, the Diabolus prison you were stuck in and you escaped. Yeah, that's what I mean. Protecting the egg. There's this egg they've been trying to protect because they think it might be potentially a new icon for the age and turn the age to the 14th age. That was actually brought up last time. So.
Oh, so they're going to have to spill the beans on how that went.
Yeah, well, I actually want you to play before they do. I want to get four other people to play it, the same scenario, to see how they go through it. And then I'm going to run a second part again, probably twice. But it's not going to be soon because, we agreed I don't want too much. We don't want to do too much play in between Cabin Con because the characters aren't going to advance except during Cabin Con.
Right.
So I want to play a little before and then a pretty hardcore couple adventures at Cabin Con. But that was really fun. But the Deadlands game was really fun, too. Yeah, so I had a good time. Did you get the game at all since last time? Oh, boo. Did you get some stuff done on our 50th episode?
Yes, thingy? I did. It's awesome. Rough.
It works.
Only thing I got to do is set up a couple of pages where, the way it works is there's going to be a place you put in your email and then it sends you an email that you then. You're verifying. This will cut down on, I don't know how much it will, but we get a lot of spam emails.
Oh, okay.
So if there's folks out there who are going to try to ruin what I'm doing here, or not ruin, just
jump in and shenanigans, yeah.
Right. So there's going to be a verification step, and then right now it all points to the same page, and instead of having a verification page and a page that shows the progress of the contest, it all points to the just signing up for it. So I just got a couple of pages to put in. It'll be real fast. The only thing I would like to do is, because I forgot the items, so and I want to put a picture of the items up.
Okay. Me to send you pictures? You want to get them off the web? Do you mean to send you the name of the items?
Yeah, just the names, because there's probably, sure that there's pictures of those that I can just use.
Do you want to use my email as a testing ground? I'll get in there and send my property.
We can do that.
See if I can. Yeah.
So
should I do it now? Not yet, though, right?
Since I'm home alone for a while, I think I'll be able to work this out in a day or two, and then I will let you know. I will text you, and then we will
Roger that.
Open up, and then we will. I think that we can on what we'll do is we'll announce it first on social media if I can get it like
right. Cool.
Tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Instead of waiting all the way till next Wednesday.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Hey, did you notice that Joe and I, Jason had a podcast and a giveaway where he wanted us to give our least favorite movie of all time. And then if you had to run it as an RPG, what would be the system you would use? And Joe and I, Joe and I picked In the Name of the King.
Exact same movie.
Exact same movie, separate times. And because we did go see it together years ago as a group, many of our gaming buddies went. And it was heinous, but I thought it was funny how you had sent that, and it was like it just sounded like we had planned it. We did not plan it. So
no, we didn't just pick the same movie.
No, it was miraculous.
Movie. We picked the same reason.
Yes,
the exact same reason. Too.
Yeah. Different RPGs though.
Different RPG systems though.
Yours was DCC because it was so all over the place. Gonzo.
Well, with armor.
Gong farmer.
Yeah, well, dude. No, just farmer because
I know
dude's name is farmer and you right. Stand out as a farmer.
Yeah.
So I and the beginning of the movie, I think in the message to Jason, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it was pretty much a funnel.
It sure seemed like it.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, too, as for me, the reason I picked 4th edition D&D is because, well, movie stunk. I think 4th edition stunk. So there you go.
Yeah.
But your mileage may vary on that.
That was funny.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to main topic.
Yeah.
Dragons in fantasy RPGs.
Yeah, buddy.
And, you know, I meant to get some time today to look up the one of the systems that you had listed down here, Arcane Evolved, because I couldn't really remember how it was treated, which was, I think, not a whole lot. But
pretty mysterious, actually, in that setting.
Right.
They were dragon men, but the dragons were like either rare or somewhere far back, I believe, that they hadn't seen any for a while. But they knew that they were pretty. I think each dragon was very individual. But, of course, we're going to focus a lot on D&D in this one. Can't help it. But I kind of broke it down to a couple of questions. So, you know, it's half the name of the most famous RPG,
right.
Dungeons and Dragons. So they're definitely iconic. A lot of types. I just listed a few because to me, Western, Oriental, and the Serpentine type, those are kind of the main three that come to my mind. So the Western being the one with, if you count the wings, buddy ours, Phillip said, 6 limbs, count the wings. Oriental, they tend to have no wings. I remember the gold dragon, early days of D&D, the gold dragon looked like an oriental dragon, had a kind of serpent look. Yeah. And I know the dragons in the oriental mythology, for the most part, are considered highly wise. I don't know if they're all good, but they're more spirit-like creatures. Whereas ours tended to, you know, they were more kept in the heavens or somewhere. They were very mystical, like supremely mystical. And in the oriental sort of area, whereas in a more, I guess, Occidental or Western area, we've always had like the dragon and St. George, you know, have a little minifigure for that. And so, and then Serpentine, I don't know where that falls, but there's lots of like mythologies of dragons throughout many histories.
Right. They vary in appearance quite a bit.
Yeah. And when it comes to appearance, do you have a favorite of those or some other that I didn't miss from that Wikipedia article that I posted there, that I put on there?
I don't think so. I like all of those. I kind of like the Serpentine for the gold dragon.
Did you? Let's make it unique because it is. Yeah. Okay.
Because it's supposed to be more good and magical and less bestial. And I think I prefer for the red dragon since it's supposed to be more bestial and a bad guy to make it more lizard like. And more, you know, or maybe even slightly demonic looking.
Yeah, I think that's something I love about 13th Age. They have one gold dragon, which is a great gold worm, and he is heroically has his body positioned in a place called the crack that leads to the abyss. He's blocked the abyssal maw that his body is physically in there, supposedly, and spiritually keeping back all the demonic hordes. Some break through, and the red dragon is just an engine of destruction. So there's this creature called, there's an icon called the three, and they're red, red, blue, and black.
Green, black.
Okay. Green is the white was killed, and the green, they believe, was killed by the elf queen years ago.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, these icons are these powerful figures in the world. And the red dragon isn't, there's smaller red dragons, but if they refer to the red, he's like, just exactly like Joe said, nearly demonic, massive, and all about killing stuff. I guess for me, I prefer the Western style the best, and image wise, looking at it, pictures of dragons, I like that better. But I do think the Oriental take is fascinating. It makes them, I like them as wise sort of spirits sometimes and beyond man's kin. That's kind of cool. What about size wise? Again, we can be D&D or not, but I have listed, you know, small, medium, large, extra large, cataclysmically massive, other.
Well, I think if you make them too big, they're not really good for foes. So, right. Like the red.
Yes, right.
He's a plot point.
Yeah.
Because he's probably too much for any PC to handle, or any group of PCs, because he's just so massive.
And if you go back to the, well, you see my figure. I have the Colossal Red from third edition era. And dude is like, I mean, literally, you know, this big. I don't even see my hands. It's you know, he's almost two. He's not quite 2 feet, but he's a foot and a half tall. He's a massive mini. And I remember I had read online, they said that back in third edition era, that his base was large enough that you could literally put a figure of every size, gargantuan, which by D&D it goes gargantuan, then huge, then large, then medium, then small, then tiny. And I think there was even
fine
and diminutive or whatever. And I did that. I literally put the gargantuan black on his base and a figure of every size on his base, and they fit.
Mm-hmm.
He is literally that big. And I think we've talked about it before. When my wife saw me back in the day, we were playing high level third edition, and they killed a dragon of that size. I plopped it down on the table. And that night after we'd played, my wife was like, you know, that was really cool, but I can't imagine 4, 6, 8 characters, I don't care how tough they are, killing something like that.
Right.
I mean, he essentially Godzilla size, right? So it's just a dragon of that size. Come on, dude. You'd have like no chance.
Right.
Tanks couldn't bring him down.
I don't care if you have a Vorpal sword.
Oh,
you put
it. You gonna reach? But you got a Vorpal.
Actually, cut a gouge in him, but he'd look at that and say, "Okay, taste fire," and then you're incinerated, and probably your Vorpal sword as well.
Yeah. Do you think that most dragons in the game, then, to make them gameable, sort of not plot points, have to be in the? I'm not a huge fan of small dragons. I mean, I know they have to exist at some point. Unless they're very I think to me, a small dragon is a better plot point too. Almost like you find a small silver dragon that seems to, has lost his way and he's confused. Maybe he's not even sure that he's a dragon anymore. And your objective is to help him out and find his family.
Right.
You played, I've had you fight small dragons, but to me, dragons are at least horse size.
Right.
If not
large, extra large. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, those are my favorite types. Medium. Okay. That's a young dragon that you could possibly fight. And I just really like them large, extra large. And I can deal with one that's really big, that's maybe huge. And that would be a real, like, major fight.
That'd be a major fight, yeah.
Yeah, and just my preference. So, but the sizes are interesting.
And also with the size, realism isn't a huge deal.
No.
But it does strain credulity a little bit.
Yeah.
If you have a gargantuan dragon or five in a single region, you would say, I would think that there wouldn't be anything. It would be easy for them to mow down everything and there wouldn't be anything left.
Yeah, yeah. Like in the Forgotten Realms, they talked about, they had something called a flight of dragons, and you'll see pictures, and it looks like 20 or 30 dragons in the sky. And I guess maybe they're medium or large, but can you imagine a flight of huge dragons where you have 30 dragons coming sweeping down into town? Dude, Waterdeep would be in a world of hurt.
Right. They could just lay waste.
Yeah.
Almost unopposed.
Yeah, and not every game, we'll talk about it more. Different games have different ways of setting up dragons, but D&Ds have their types. And if you got 6, 8, 10 different types of dragons, which D&D at one point, I know in second edition, must have been 30 different types of dragons, if not more. And you have all these different size categories, right? The sizes they were.
Right.
And D&D went from small all the way up to, you know, they'd have large, huge, gargantuan, whatever. Even in back in the old days, they had different sizes. It's hard to imagine them existing. Is there room on the planet for that kind of voracious appetite?
Well, some of the dragons don't, they don't all eat meat.
Right.
So they all have a variety of different things that they eat. So, but the amount of destruction that they could cause if they're not, if you're not playing nice with them.
Yeah.
You know, they could just, you know, terrorize. Everybody would be ruled by the dragons, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think you can... put a good limiter on them by saying, you know, that there's an egg hatched every generation or something like that, or whatever, a very limited amount. That way, you don't have that many dragons, unless you want a certain feel for your game.
Right. And I should have picked the setting. I can't believe I didn't. Council
or
Worm.
Or if you don't care about it making any kind of sense.
Right.
So you just have a bunch of dragons all over the place and not really care about how much they're, the, you know, affecting the ecology or whatever.
And you can play D&D perfectly well like that. We've talked about that a little bit. Yeah. Do you really have to make everything fit? No, we're just playing a game, dude. Having fun. Yeah. And you can do that. Yeah. I was saying the setting we picked to dig into this episode, I should have picked Council of Worms. I don't know why I didn't. That would have been perfect. I'm such a doofus. Right. That's all. In that setting, dragons do rule. The people are kind of their secondary thing. But yeah, so size is a big deal. Size matters.
Size matters.
What about rarity? And we kind of led into that. Within an ecology, within a campaign, how many is too many, which we kind of got into. What do you think of the idea? And I've heard settings that do this. I know Arcane Evolved has, and I think Shadowrun does.
Right.
Dragons are unique.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So we kind of talk about, like, you know, straining credulity, the idea of how many dragons. So in a campaign for you, Joe, I mean, for me, I want a small number of dragons. I don't mean tiny. I mean small. I want a few evil dragons. I want a few good and noble dragons. And I want some that does their own thing.
Right.
And I want one that's bigger than 4 warships. Okay. I want my red dragon to exist. He probably doesn't eat all that mass. Doesn't mean you're red. The massive dragon, he could be unique. And he may come out like the Terras just every once in a while and eat. Or you know what? Being a dragon, even if he's evil, he may have transcended food. He may kill for the sheer joy of it. You know what I'm saying? Because did Smaug even eat, really?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think Smaug, and he didn't say it. I don't think it's in the book. He strikes me as a creature that always... It was weird, but now that I'm older, I like it. Gold dragons and original D&D would talk about eating gems. And I'm I kind of like that. That's because, like, I don't have to kill people. I eat gems. And they even talked about gold dragons being kind of a little bit – every dragon's a little greedy. They kind of like stuff, you know?
Right.
That's why gold dragons don't hand you their hoard over just because you're good guys. Right here, take all my cool crap. No. Yeah,
they like their stuff.
Yeah, and I kind of – that's a D&D. I don't want to get too far into the D&D thing. We'll talk about that in a minute maybe. Well, maybe I don't know if I do it. Yeah, the D&D. So anyway, my point is I like the idea of having enough room for dragons. And the ones you fight are large – I was going to say large, extra large. You won't see them a lot. And like you said, they don't – their fecundity, their ability to reproduce is very limited. So that's what I like. Now, other campaigns can do other things. They can have warring dragons. They can have dragonlance where you ride dragons. Not a huge fan of that. To me, a dragon rider is a very unique person that has created a unique bond with a dragon that no one else has. I don't mind having – I mean, I'm not against it, but it'd have to be a real thing that I want to push in a game. But like if we're talking about Mudsword, that's kind of where I want Mudsword to be with dragons. What do you think? Well, what would be – I mean, I'm not
– That sounds good to me. I don't necessarily need realism, but I don't want dragons around the corner all over the place.
No.
I want them a little more rare.
Roger that. Should, and again, I guess I don't think every dragon should be unique. How many dragons have your characters, Joe, personally fought? I can say I think I've never fought a dragon. I may be wrong. I think I'm wrong, but I feel like I've never fought a dragon as a player. Again, remember, folks, I've been a player 1/1,000,000th as often as Joe has.
Right. Well, considering how many times you've used dragons as opponents, I can't remember.
Oh, really?
Possibly.
Well, could you give me just in general, can you say, do you think you fought dragons as percentage of encounters 10% of the time?
Oh, at least. Well,
not just me. All your gaming career. We've seen
Yeah,
okay.
Overall, at least 25%, maybe more.
Oh, okay. I kind of like that. I think that's cool. And Joe knows I don't use dragons a lot, but it's not because I don't love them.
No, they're very deadly.
Yeah, they are. I remember in 3E, remember this, dude. Remember when they said in 3E that the dragons actually batted above their CR?
Right, right.
I mean, Cook admitted that if you're playing a CR6 dragon, he's probably a 9. Which means if you're putting that up against 5 fourth level characters.
That was before Draconomicon, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that was 3E, not 3.5. 3E. Right. He said they made them on purpose. They literally lied about their CRs.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't give a crap. But, and I remember thinking, I was at one adventure, the first adventure. What was the one with Meepo in it? Where they go, had the little twig blights when first introduced in 3E, Mealies on the cover, one of the blue adventures. Brain cramp. Mealy. You know what? Miele is her name. Miale, one of the icons.
Miele, yeah.
Hold on a second. People loved it. The Sunless Citadel.
Oh, yeah.
And we do have a thing called the internet, so I'm going to try to use it periodically now that even though I'm owed. So there was a little white dragon in there, and I could not believe, as a hatchling, how much butt he kicked on third level characters. They got my party. They won, but they got their butts. I mean, it was like they felt like they got their butt kicked to win that fight. I mean, they were terrified. I mean, the first hit, I think I didn't even roll critical. The little hatchling got on the fighter and was like, dude, I'm down to single hit points. I'm third level. And they're like, oh my God. Then he flies around and breathes. And they're like, the wizard's like, ah, you know? And I was like, this is ridiculous. I love dragons.
Yeah. Well, I remember Dragon Slayer, the little hatchling dragons murdered that girl, didn't
yes,
they?
Or nearly? Yes, or nearly they did. Yeah. Yes, they did. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with dragons being the toughest thing. I mean, for us, it's Dungeons and Dragons. It's the name of the game. I'm granted, it's Mud Sword, but they're going to be Mud Dragons, and they're going to be tough. So, should dragons be immortal? What do you think of that? Or do they have a lifespan?
I would say leave that as an open question.
Yeah, I agree. But my gut says, not just because I think I want dragons to be ridiculously powerful, which I do. I want people to quake in their boots when they fight a dragon.
My new jerk is yes.
Yeah, if you take D&D as a template, and these dragons get bigger and stronger and smarter and more powerful as they grow. I mean, forever. They don't talk about them getting weaker and their eyes dim.
No.
And a great gold worm that's lived 4,000 years, he's not weaker than he was when he was virile and just a mere 1,050.
Right.
I mean, he's like, I will pimp slap 12 20th level mages and not even sweat. I mean, not quite, but I'm saying he'll be like, I ain't afraid of Elminster. Bring him. You know what I'm saying? And that's a creature that, to my opinion, is appropriate. Now, Goldworm, probably in D&D, wouldn't fight Elminster unless he was gone crazy, which is always a cool idea.
Right.
I've done that. Evil Goldworm.
Well, Elminster.
No, played a have a Goldworm went crazy in the.
Oh yes, yes.
I think you were part of that fight. You had to fight it. You're like, because Joe was like, what? Gold dragons are good. And I'm like, aha, not this one.
Insane yeah. Membrane.
Do you have you don't have a strong opinion any of those about the rarity of dragons, but you do think you lean toward, you're like me, you definitely lean toward they're probably essentially immortal just by the design in D&D.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, my knee jerk is yes, they should probably be immortal from the point of view of until killed.
Yes, correct. Right. Yeah. And no, not unkillable.
Yeah.
But if you don't kill them, they ain't killing themselves. Well, not technically. They don't have to.
Right.
Should they be awesomely magical? It means, what I mean by that is, should they be spellcasters in and of themselves? Should that be a default?
I don't know about a default, because okay. Especially if we're going with immortal.
Right.
If you don't have some limiter on them, then eventually you're going to have a 10,000-year-old lich dragon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to
break be a lich, dead, yeah.
But with as powerful as an archmage, ninth level spells, I mean, he would rule the planet. There would
sure, be I mean,
stopping them.
Yeah, I mean, a 4,000-year-old dragon who also is a spellcaster. I mean, what I mean by certain versions of D&D gave them automatic spell levels, magic user spell levels, and I think. Didn't the gold worm in second edition get wizard and cleric spell levels?
I think so.
He really was unbelievable. I'm sorry. A great gold worm at 20th level party would not beat him.
Right. Which is fine, because they're not, unless you're playing evil guys.
And even then, I'm not sure you'd win.
No, you still wouldn't win. I'm just saying you don't have much call to fight a great gold worm.
To be fair, they could, in this sense, in a practical sense, five players against one DM, we've talked about. I mean, you guys, when four or five of you guys play together, you're much smarter and tactically skilled than I am. I have to kind of set up things for my guys to be challenging. Otherwise, you'll just smoke everything. So if you're a bunch of evil dudes and you're 20th level and you're coming after my dragon, you probably have a shot. But if I'm able to spend time thinking about it, and if he's a 15th level second edition wizard and 15th level cleric, right. There's stuff he could do that you will never sneak up on him.
Yeah.
And you will. And when you try to get in there, somebody's dying.
Right.
And you can do all the preparation you want. And no fighter's going to want to step up.
How one character doesn't die around. So you got to be.
You better have a super plan. You better be. Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. I don't mind that level, but I'm with you. I don't think they have to be
in the tunnel. And see you coming and just breathe their fire down the tunnel.
Well, not to mention
initiative, and they could do it times.
There's a good topic. What about a dragon's lair? Think of all the minions he could have. I mean, he could have powerful creatures. Creatures from the outer planes that a great gold worm, any dragon, a red dragon, make deal with demons and devils, demon lords.
Right.
Say, hey, somebody ever comes into my lair, we made a deal, Orcus. You're going to teleport through 10 of your 15th level vampire wizards.
Right. Right.
Okay. It's on.
Right.
From all over the realms.
Right.
It's going to be cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's interesting, but I don't think it's necessary. I do like how the old D&D, I say the old D&D, there were versions of Dungeons and Dragons. Any of our callers or people listen to us want to call in and correct it or tell me which one. I know there was ones where the white dragons were too stupid to be spellcasters.
Yeah.
For many age categories, they had to become like a white dragon didn't get spellcasting until he was old. And he became like a third or fourth level caster. I wouldn't care if there was a couple of dragons that couldn't be spellcasters. Right. They just rely on their natural magical ability.
Right.
Yeah. So that would be okay. I think you're right. You got to be careful, because you can make dragons unassailable if you give them too many spell powers. What about, I'm going to kind of move on from magic a little bit, unless you got something else you want to talk about. Nope. What do you think about their demeanor? And this goes to alignment. So I said good, bad, ugly, beyond alignment. Again, we're not alignment people in general, but just the idea of a dragon's demeanor.
Right.
Usually in D&D, they're portrayed as haughty. They're all greedy. They have greedy to an extent. Gold won't murder people for gold. Gold dragons and silver dragons don't murder people if they get gold, but they collect it over time. They might require payment when they're younger, especially. They collect hordes. It's kind of a thing dragons do. But alignment-wise, do you like the idea, especially in D&D, how dragons are color-coded for your convenience? Do you like them all being, these are good, these are neutral, these are chaotic evil, these are lawful good, these are...
Well, as long as the setting has some internal consistency,
right,
that's fine. Even if the consistency is, you never know,
yeah,
that's fine, as long as you know it in advance. If you're going in expecting the standard thing you just said, you know, the color and the alignments as appropriate. And but you throw a loop every once in a while. Well, that's actually okay if you throw a loop every once in a while.
Yeah.
But if,
but
if you're just inconsistent,
right?
I don't really care for that. But if there is some, and with alignment, I'm less enamored of alignment and more just, you know, as a player, you play your character with a particular ethos,
right?
And you stick to it.
Yeah.
And so that everything that is sentient is going to have some kind of ethos, even especially dragons, even if it's more, if they're more monstrous and they are just ferocious killers of everything around them. I guess it's just dependent on the setting.
Yeah. I guess, again,
I'm fine with standard.
That's me fine. Too. I have no trouble with the color codes and, you know, black's chaotic evil, blue's lawful evil. It's all fine. Yeah. But I also love the idea. I like a connecting, besides their physiology, dragons should have some physical, my mind should be similar. I mean, you could have your oriental type dragon. You could have a variety of dragons. But like if you're going to go with D&D and the color codes, those dragons all tended to be pretty similar. I like the idea of maybe dragons having a thing like avarice. I like that. What if all dragons and the good dragons just try to fight that as much as they can, but they still struggle. They still have their hordes. You know, the gold dragon still sits on a pretty big size mound. He might dole some of it out to help the locals, but it's kind of hard for him.
Right.
He hates giving stuff away and does it begrudgingly, or he does it. Maybe he doesn't do it begrudgingly, but you can even see him kind of grimace sometimes. And maybe as they get older, it becomes harder. That'd be interesting. I love the idea of something that ties them all together. Whereas the reds, like, yeah, my stuff is my stuff and your stuff is my stuff.
Right.
And I'm going to eat animals and people and whatever I feel like. Heck, I'll eat your whole town. I don't care. You know, and I'm good with that mixture. They fully engage. Other evils might only engage a little bit. I don't want to be fighting adventures all the time. I'm not killing everybody and their mother. I'd prefer to get paid. Look, I'm coming to town. Here's not going to work. Don't make me kill you all. Give me 1,000 gold every 6-8 months. We'll call it good. I won't murder you. You know, and so to them, that's less, and it is lesser than just rampage death.
Right. Right.
But he's like, maybe adventurers won't bother me and go to, you know, a medium sized village. He's like, look, we can afford that.
And you know, if you're keeping it rare,
mm-hmm.
some degree, you probably want to just individualize.
I do. I know. I'm leaning in my mind. I'm leaning a lot toward that. We talk. I kind of like the idea of dragons being totally individual.
What and maybe would also color. Be interesting is if you had something where the colors change with their age, perhaps. Ooh,
that's an idea.
And perhaps their temperament has a chance of changing as well. So maybe a younger dragon's gold, and an older dragon. Older dragons tend, because of their avarice, to red. Yeah. Not always, but
not always.
And they can end up being greedy hoarders and all that. It might start early, but definitely by the time they're older.
Yeah, you could see a dragon like a person. I mean, I was like a person. Imagine that, you know, he's kind of not mottled gold, but burnished or burnt gold. And he's like, he's good. But he's like, he will not brook anybody touching his gold.
Right.
And like, if you meet him for an audience, he's like, no one knows comes from my hoard.
Right.
Don't even ask for nothing. It's not yours. But I'm happy to help you. Look, this is here's some knowledge. Here's a spell.
Right.
It's cool. You know, I'm not evil. I want to help people. I don't want anybody to die.
Right.
Said the poor goat, their corn's not working out. Well, I'll tell you this for what's happening. It's probably a necromancer. I want to head over there and take care of him. You know, he can be helpful, but when it comes to his like, oh, we need some money. Good luck. Go find some.
Yeah.
Because you ain't
getting mine. I did.
Yeah, I did. You ain't getting mine. Yeah, it could be a variety of things. I think that's fun. That's more fun. Really make them more unique. Combating dragons and dragon combat in general. I think we're going to agree. They shouldn't be treated like any other monster, should they?
No, except for this something that's larger or smaller than that. Might be, but once they start, you know, especially if they have all the attacks, the standard array of dragon attacks, you know, you got a wing buffet and tail slap and two, three, four claws and bite and breath weapon. I mean, you can't treat them just like an ogre or a giant. They got too much stuff going on. And then spells if they have them.
Oh, yeah. They should be. And you know, the breath weapon always, I like, I think 13th Age has kind of a, not 13th Age, some games I've played, I can't remember what they are. They have a cooldown period for the breath weapon where you roll a D till they can't do it again. And I like that well enough. I kind of like that better than three times a day, like the old school, where you can just, because really, if you wanted to, and if you were smart in first edition, if you were smart at the DM, you keep your red dragon in the air and they breathe for their 88 hit points of damage, which is what a large or old adult, maybe a great gold, great, and it wasn't called a great worm, it was called an ancient red, I believe, had 88 hit points, and you would breathe three times in a row.
And then everybody would be dead.
But that's what you should do. That's smart. Right, you would never melee until you breathe all the three things. But if you could only breathe once and then have a random number of times you can breathe again while it recharges, that's cool. And every once in a while, you get the one on the die and you get to breathe twice in a row. It's like, you already breathed. Let's rush up. Oh, crap. And that would be
going to die.
Yeah. But also, I've heard a lot, there's been a lot of articles written on dragon combat. And I would like. I've had some issues as a DM running dragons in combat. I think a lot of times I've usually got my dragons beaten too easily, in my opinion, especially in the third edition era. But there have been times where I think I was too crafty or played the dragon, too crafty, and I just mowed over the party, especially at the range breathing. Though I do think breath weapon, speaking about that in particular, I'm not a fan of cones and lines.
I
like dragons as all over the place, bro.
Yeah. Oh, right. I have a story about you.
Okay.
So we knew we were going to face a dragon.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure we knew it's a red dragon, perhaps.
Okay.
So we spread out, and we stayed spread out all on the way to its lair. And somehow the dragon knew we were coming. And even though we were spread out, somehow we were still in a line. And it just strafed us. And we all died. I'm pretty sure.
I would not put that past that horrible DM, you remember.
And that was a while back. But
yeah, it was back in the day. But you're right.
That's the thing. If a dragon's intelligent and knows that there's a bunch of... folks that are limited to walking on the ground, and it can fly around and strafe like that. I mean, why wouldn't it?
I've heard guys in articles and on websites say dragons should not land until the very end. And I think they're right. I mean, he should strafe. Right. He has spells and breath weapons. Homeboy shouldn't land until the end.
And if you go to its lair, it'd be very rare that it wouldn't know you were there.
Correct. And he would have all kinds of help because he's not stupid. Right. You'd be hard-pressed to face Smaug all by himself in a D&D setting. He'd fight through all his minions and his traps and tricks. And then when you get to him, you'd be like, oh, dude, we're so screwed. Yeah, and I'm kind of thinking it should be a little bit like that.
When with Smaug, this is the thing. Smaug was a plot device.
Correct.
Not an opponent. Correct. Not really.
No.
So... that's one way to use a dragon of immense size and age.
Yes.
That's with the lore of Smaug, he was pretty much unkillable unless you found the chink in his armor.
You literally would need an army or a lucky guy named Bard to kill him.
I don't think an army would have taken him unless they happened to find his weak spot.
Yeah.
You couldn't penetrate.
Now for that dumb Hobbit movie where they dipped him in gold, I would think, hey, thanks for covering my spot. Now I'm going to go out there and be unkillable.
Unkillable.
Yeah, but from the DM's perspective, I always want dragons, and I'm really not talking about just murdering people, but I do want my players after a fight with a dragon to be like, huh, holy crap. You know, that to me, and you can argue I want that all the time, every fight, but I really want it with dragons, and I think that's sometimes why I hold back. Because I'm afraid I won't do it justice.
Right.
Yeah. When you're fighting dragons, Joe Harden's playing a character who's going to fight a dragon. What do you think is your greatest? What's the best strategy? And I mean that from even from it, it doesn't have to be a maybe it's something before you do before combat or
recon. You have to do recon.
Yeah.
If you don't do recon, I mean, if your objective is to go take a dragon, then you have to do some recon. If you're just wandering in a dungeon and you happen to discover a dragon's lair,
then you
run.
Last decision.
You go away. You might, if you have, depending on what your status is as far as the party goes.
Yeah.
If you decide you want to then take that lair, you do some recon. You can't just walk in there blind. You're going to have to know stuff.
Did you hear Tinkar's recent, he on his podcast, he's been talking about his buddies and him getting back together and doing some the buddies from high school and college playing some D&D, and they're playing the old school game. And he regaled people a couple of times of a situation where they fought this green dragon and ran it off, and they ran in and got some of his treasure and took off. And they were like, after they just said, look, we're happy. Really, this can go nowhere but down, because when that dragon comes back, we're dead. Why don't we end the campaign here? That's an interesting approach. I mean, you're like, whoo, ran that thing off. He's like, I don't really want to finish this out. Let's say we hid.
I get that.
Yeah.
Request. But at the same time, as a player, I think I would hate to not try to reap the reward of outsmarting the green dragon some kind of way.
Yeah, and then...
even at the risk of the green dragon finding out and all that other stuff.
Right.
As the DM, I would also be like, really?
Yeah. Well, we're like, they took some of the stuff. They just didn't want to deal with the repercussions of...
Right. And then as Eric, the DM, I'd be like, that's real chicken of you.
Yeah, of Eric planning the revenge of the dragon.
Which I'm sure that they'll admit to being fearful of the consequences.
I'm sure. I tell you what, though. I remember we used to say, too, this was a saying we had in our group. You'll remember it. You never want to turn the corner and face a dragon.
No.
You don't ever want to be surprised. And you guys, and a lot of times you would especially would say, dude, we need to run.
Yeah.
And sometimes they would agree, and other times they were like, yeah, we can do this. And you're like, no, we did not know this. Yeah.
I mean, there's probably circumstances where you don't have a whole lot of choices, but when you can run, I would say the same thing, I believe, for powerful undead, like a vampire.
Right.
Turn the corner, there's a vampire. You got, if you can run, I mean,
yeah,
you should. Unless it depends on your, I guess, relative power. But with a dragon, they have so many weapons they can bring to bear.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
And we kind of hit this next one. I'm kind of done with combat if you are.
Mm-hmm.
This next one we kind of talked about. Do you think outside of combat, do you like the idea? I like the idea of dragons being sage-like, potentially dragons that could be, even ones that are neutral to helpful. I like the idea. And I don't mind them being enigmatic either.
Right.
What if there's just not a lot of knowledge about dragons? They keep to themselves, except when they do their stealing and killing, and they don't do it a lot. Just every dozen or 20 or 40 years, you'll have a dragon attack. It's just really rare. And so, or a dragon event. Let's call it an event. I like that idea. Not that I'm sure I would do it 100%, but now unknowable, I don't know. But enigmatic wouldn't be horrible. It would make the players eventually play enough in the world to figure out a little bit about them. Or make that the focus of the campaign to eventually learn enough about a dragon.
Right.
It does seem like one thing fascinating from that Wikipedia article I thought was interesting, that almost every culture has a dragon myth.
Yes, of some kind. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes you wonder if they actually lived at some point, some version of a dragon, or if they were just creatures like a Komodo dragon that looked draconic.
Right.
Yeah. I don't mean like the fire breathing ones. I don't think that's quite likely. And we talked about the next one. I talked about how I was kind of intimidated by a dragon to do them right.
Yeah. Anything that's complicated and any creature that's complicated and intelligent, you don't want to just do them a disservice, because you're not serving the players right either.
Yeah, like powerful demons and devils, beholders, liches, mind flayers. I want them to be terrifying in some aspect, or, right, you know, mystifying or tricky or hard to deal with. You know, something where players got to put their noggins in and, okay, it's a mind flayer, you know, attack pattern delta.
Right.
Dragons in D&D, we kind of hit a lot of that. You said you're fine with the color coordination, the age categories. You got any special more thoughts about dragons throughout the editions, or was there an addition of D&D that you thought the dragons were the coolest?
Well, I know, like I mentioned earlier, with the Draconomicon, that just turned everything up, I think, even beyond 11, because they were already really powerful for their CR.
And even in 3.5, yeah.
Right, and that's when that came out, right? 3.5, the Draconomicon?
Yeah, and I've got a copy, and that, you know, Philip will tell the story. He was like, you know, What's the power?
Admixture or max?
Yeah, breath weapon admixture, where you can change your type of breath weapon and stack different sorts of abilities on it. And I mean, that's, you know, those. I really thought if a DM's goal was to really screw the characters, you could be pretty straight with them and just go in there and change a few feats and abilities. And next thing you know, this red dragon is not your standard red dragon. Even if he's only,
and they're already really powerful. So
yeah, they're already really powerful, which I guess it could be fun if you're like, if you had a group of 15th or 16th level characters and you're taking, you know, an adult blue, which maybe is only supposed to be a challenge for 10th level characters, so the characters are being a little cocky, then you load him up with some abilities like maximize breath weapon and quicken breath weapon, and the party's like, whoa, or extra breath weapon. And like, oh man, he just quickened and breathed. He rolled a one, look at this. Because dragons could lower their die to, I think that was extra breath, and like could lower how quickly it'd come back. So you could quicken a breath and then do a regular breath. I think you could set that up. And so, you know, your average little dragon we should kick the poop out of just made life very difficult for our single hit point characters now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I guess I never played fourth edition, but I did learn some about how they treated dragons.
Oh,
so I think it's a little similar to 13th Age, where they could, in 4th edition, they could act on multiple rounds.
Yes.
So I think there's a way for dragons in, do 13th Age dragons do that as well?
I don't know, but they can do things. They do get the escalation die.
Yeah. So that
speaking. And the one thing I noticed, a lot of dragons, which is good and bad, their breath weapon only triggers on a certain attack roll. But the problem is, if they do a bite for 60 damage, they roll high enough, they could get to breathe on top of that in the same round. So it's like going multiple times. If you roll a high enough number, so yeah, I guess to your question, that kind of is there, because they can roll. If you roll 15 or higher, your dragon gets to now breathe
right
for 140 damage. So,
and I really like the way that makes dragons, instead of getting like seven or eight or nine things they can maybe do all at one time in one part of the round, you spread that out and it makes it more interesting, I think.
I do like the idea of dice triggering actions.
Yeah.
But I think as you get to higher levels and if you're doing a single foe, you have to let the dragon, and that's where 5e's got some things right, whether it's perfectly right in terms of mechanics, the idea of legendary actions or lair actions are really pretty cool. And I would absolutely use that in my game, no matter what edition of the game it is.
Right.
The dragon's in his own lair. He gets special actions outside of his turn in combat. They get to do cool crap to you.
Right.
Are there any other games that you thought had interesting? I listed a few. Like, I know in Savage Worlds, dragons are listed pretty generically. They don't talk too much about color dragons, though the Pathfinder Savage Worlds game is going to have all the color dragons laid out.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same kind of deal with the dragons.
Yeah, and we talked about 13th Age. Shadowrun, I know little about, but I do know, I think some dragons run corporations.
Right.
Shadowrun. And Rift dragons can be, young dragons can be characters.
Mm-hmm.
Can evolve is fairly unique. I don't know other systems come to mind. Any other systems come to mind how dragons behave in other systems besides D&D?
Not really. With the Arcane Evolve, they were pretty enigmatic. You had a draconic character race.
Yeah.
But the dragons were kind of in the background.
Right. Okay.
Although I meant to pull out my Arcane Evolved and maybe look at this, but today's been really hectic.
Yeah.
I think that there was some kind of product that they put out for that called The Return of the Dragons.
That sounds right.
So they did. He did treat it in some kind of way,
yeah.
Beyond just being a mystery. But I really—it's been so long since I've played that. I can't remember.
And I do believe 5e is coming out with Fizban's Treasury of Dragons or something. That's coming out soon. So 5e is going to do a treatment with dragons. I've got. Let's look on my shelf. I think I've got. I've got Arcana Evolved. I don't remember X-Crawl very well, what they did with dragons. But, yeah, that's about all I think I've got. I don't know about Palladium. It'd be interesting to know how Palladium did them. But anything else you want to talk about with those awesome, super cool creatures? Huh? Icons of the game?
I like dragons. They need to be – I think they need to be – if you're playing D&D,
mm-hmm.
you need to have some sort of prominence. Even if it's just in the lore and you don't want to fight them, they need to be part of it. Or it doesn't, for me, it doesn't feel quite like, it just feels more like generic fantasy.
There was a Red Hand of Doom was a module that was all about dragons and dragon armies. Not quite Kryn, but it was old 3.5 or 3.0 module. And they did a lot with dragons. And they had the Dragonborn Races of the Dragon. And that was the first introduction to a dragonborn character in 3.5. And I always thought it would be neat to have a campaign. If you wanted to have this, I don't want to have a very unique world where dragons are very significant. There's lots of, all kinds of dragons, and there's dragon mixtures with men. And that could be fun as a one-off or a short campaign where dragons are prominent. But in most campaigns for me, I want dragons to be rare, and I want their names to be whispered.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
I think I've had my fill of bloodline issues.
Yeah, fair enough.
We got dragon blood all over the place. Everybody's got dragon blood.
Yeah, dragon blood, demon blood.
How unique.
Cat person, yeah. People do whatever you want, but it's not for me. All right. I think that's good. That's all I got to say about dragons. I love them. How about that?
Good deal. All right, so like it, love it, or leave it.
Yeah. You want to go first?
I will start.
Okay, do it.
Hiking. As in walking around for no purpose except to walk around.
Anywhere between like it and leave it, but only because never been a thing I was really into. It seemed too slow when I was young. Not very interesting. Now that I'm older, though, I really want to get into actual hiking where I can get good enough shape to go into hills and do some climbing. A friend of mine, Tom, takes people out and does some of that on his time off in the summer. In fact, he just got back from a trip from Colorado, you know, Tom. And he took a big old hike with some guys. And I would like to do something like that. I don't want to go crazy, but I know it'd be good exercise. And as an older guy with bad knees, I know, and heavy, I think it's a good idea for me to do a lot more walking and hiking if I can, but walking for sure. I would say it's still probably, I like the idea of it, but I've mostly left it in my lifetime. Yeah.
Jokey. WWF.
Well, are you talking wrestling?
Wrestling.
Okay. Wrestling's WWE. Love it.
Not wrestling. Wrestling.
Right. Wrestling. Professional wrestling. When I was young, 8 to about 14, dude, I loved it. I watched local shows. I didn't get to watch WWE. It was called WWF. It's now WWE. But I left it at about 14 or 15. Watched snippets, never got into it. I don't really watch it now. I do have a fondness for it, kind of like comic books. I don't really collect them now, but I have a fondness for it. I really loved it. And when I was really young, I thought it was real. And then when I got tired of that, now that I've come back, I see it as entertainment. I can enjoy it now. I would say love the idea of it, but just like it now, I think.
And finally,
yeah,
melons. The
love, right? Love cantaloupe, my absolute favorite. Like watermelon, mushmelon. I like. What other melons?
I don't know if I've ever had a mushmelon.
Maybe I'm confused. What's the green one? Maybe it's not called mushmelon.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay. There's a green melon. Those are three that I know. So I'm not versed in melons. I found watermelons annoying. Was never a fan of it.
Because of the seeds?
Yeah, seeds were a big deal. I mean, they seem like, I don't like spending them all the time. It just seemed, I couldn't really enjoy the melon. But I do like good watermelon. I like it red. I like it firm. Don't like it soft at all. But dude, cantaloupe, that and a fresh peach, tied for my favorite fruit.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. My turn for you.
Your turn.
Don't think I've asked this according to my list. Television.
Used to be addicted. And if a TV set pops on, my eyes will go right to it. But I get bored quickly. I wouldn't memorize the TV guide, but I would look at it so much you would think I did.
Right.
Because I could tell you like the schedule of TV shows and all kinds of,
back when it really mattered.
It mattered, because there were only three channels.
Right.
But over the years, my interest in the TV programming has waned quite a bit. And now sometimes I'm like, why do we even have a television? Because there's not a lot of it that interests me at this point. So right now, I could say like at most.
Gotcha.
I can't say leave it, because there's still some things I like.
All right. Now, you're probably going to think I've asked it. We've talked about it, but we haven't really put it on this and like it, love it, or leave it, but I'm going to say it. Lord of the Rings.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, hands down. I mean, there's issues. I'm not a purist, though, when it comes to different media. It depends. Right. Well, to a point.
Right.
So, I was first learning about when it was coming out, I was like, oh, because of a couple of things were kind of.
You mean The Fellowship?
No.
Oh.
It was the some of the leaked information about how big a role they were going to give Arwen.
Oh.
Which most of it didn't happen. They might have filmed it, but it didn't end up in the finished movie.
Right. Right.
Or even the extended, it didn't end up in there either.
Right. Not as much. Sure.
No.
Yeah.
I was really dreading it, but they only kept one little thing, and it was still a little irritating with the whole sneaking up on Aragorn and putting the sword to his neck. And I'm like, yeah, that wouldn't happen. But
it wouldn't have happened, yeah.
I mean, he could have been caught unawares, but I don't think she would have done that.
Wasn't she kind of a princess in the book? Just a
her role was as far as all that is concerned, who knows? Yeah. I mean, there might have been something about it in the Silmarillion, which I didn't read very much of. So it's possible, but she didn't seem like a warrior.
Right.
And I don't know. Maybe I'm reading in too much. I don't think she was the kind of person that would do that. I think she would have felt that she would dishonor. Aragorn.
Even if she could, she wouldn't have done that.
Right. I don't think.
Because elves could probably do it, because they're better than people, generally speaking.
Right. In general, they're angelic beings in that.
Right.
I don't think Gimli would have done such a thing.
Right.
I don't think Legolas, any of those people, they just wouldn't have done it. It would have been an honor issue, I think.
All right. Okay.
But
fair enough.
I might be reading into it. But anyway, apart from that, small, minor.
Yeah.
Thing, love it.
Well, and we tear apart things we love anyway.
Sure.
What about this one? Nostalgia
has its place. I would say like it, but nostalgia has its place. You just don't be ruled by it, I think, is a good a good way of looking at it.
Fair enough. All right, cool. Shall we move on to Dig This Setting.
Dig This Setting, World of Darkness.
Yeah, I picked something that neither you nor I are truly experts in.
Yeah, so this will be.
But I definitely have. It should be really good. But I have some opinions on it.
So
I was listening to a podcast today. The fellow was talking about how he didn't like folks saying just what you just said. I don't know much about it, but I have a clue.
Fair enough, dude. He's not wrong. But I'm about to say people should call in and go, you're so wrong, Randy. It's not even believable. And that's okay. From my limited experience, I played Joe and I played together in a short campaign in the third edition there with a friend of ours once. I played with a buddy of ours, Tim, in a Dark Ages vampire game. These were both vampire games. I've never played the other settings. What about you?
I've only played vampire a few times. I read through, skimmed through Mage the Ascension, I think.
Yeah,
maybe not the Ascension. It's the one where the magic was kind of like you had to.
The Awakening.
The one where if the magic had to fit the situation, instead of casting a spell where a big explosion of fire, you'd have to have some like gas main explode or something.
Yeah, you don't. I think our buddy Patrick talks about it, and it's like vulgar, being vulgar with your magic was a bad move. And but the World of Darkness is a modern day setting, and in the early 90s, it was like. It was hot. It was the hotness, dude. It was like second only to D&D.
Right.
And at some points, when D&D TSR had its issues before it had to sell to to WotC, all you could find. I mean, it was the number one book I saw on the shelf with new stuff.
Oh, sure, WotC, and it had
number one RPG. Stuff. The World of Darkness is vampire, werewolf, mage, wraith, all that stuff together. It's a modern day horror setting. Well, horror is not. I don't know. You're exploring. I think you play monsters, basically.
Essentially.
Vampires and werewolves and changelings and mages. And almost like, if you've seen the movies Underworld, very similar to that. I don't know. I wouldn't call the setting dystopian, but you play all these, like in Vampire in particular, let's focus on that one. There were these different clans of vampires, and they had different abilities and different approaches. And there was kind of the clans would have, I think they would have meetings, I guess, in terms of hierarchies. And there was something about the turning, the embrace was something we played through with our buddy Scott way back in the day. And where you turn from a human to a vampire. I think it's when you read it, it's dark, it's evocative. Playing it was just weird being the monster dude. And I know you're supposed to fight the idea is to role play your struggle with being a creature.
Some kind of struggle in each one of those settings, as far as I know. There might be an exception.
And the goth, I don't know if goth came first. The clothing and the movement was part of that. Or they? I think they probably added vampire to it. And some people that were goth played vampire. That was my first exposure to anyone LARPing, was LARPing a vampire, doing a vampire. I wasn't in the LARP, but I saw it at Gen Con. And I was like, what are these people doing? That's weird. You know, and especially when they were fighting paper, scissors, and obfuscate. I'm waving my hand in front of my face. I don't know all the rules, but some folks had a great time with it. And I think John Allen Large probably will have an opinion on this. I think he's a fan of LARPing in general a little bit.
He knows a bit about vampire.
But the setting is dark. You've seen the movies, Underworld movies. It's kind of, I really thought the first Underworld was, to me, struck me as classic World of Darkness, vampires versus werewolves. Well,
I will say that I liked it a lot. I'm not sure how it probably depends on which vampire lore set of lore you're talking about.
Yeah.
And werewolf, because it mixed the two.
You like the movie or you like the World of Darkness setting? Which one?
I'm saying the movie, but as far as how well it evoked the setting or the game.
Dude,
I don't know. I know some people.
White Wolf sued them and lost.
Yeah.
They sued Underworld, which I think, honestly, in my opinion, was bullcrap. That smelled an awful lot like White Wolf setting. But whatever. I mean, I have no opinion. I'm not a lawyer. Anyway, back to that. So the setting is kind of cool. I thought I wasn't enamored of vampire players back in the 90s. The ones that I met, they felt like they thought they were better than D&D players. Let me clarify. The ones that Randy met.
Yes, yes, yes.
I met a few that weren't, but I met a lot that just seemed, oh, I don't play D&D. I'm too cool. I'm into being a vampire. How awesome it is. I'm
going to paint my fingernails black.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, look, I'm not into that.
All that.
Yeah. But this is a setting that I can only speak so much to. I read some, you know, bits and snippets of books. I thought it read well. I thought it was cool. It was definitely a dark setting. I didn't see where you could go with it. To me, maybe being stuck in my D&D ways is like, okay, so you're playing a vampire. Are you going to like go out and just eat people all the time? Or is it going to be this angst ridden? Am I going to always be soul searching in my mind? Is it going to be psychological role playing? I mean, I guess that's what it was. It was never my cup of tea. Right. I mean, I thought it was good, but it's only from my limited viewpoint. So the idea, I think, was
focused in everything. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the World of Darkness, I don't think the idea was to play someone play a mage, someone play a werewolf, some play a vampire. I think you tended to play in those own book settings, and they rarely crossed. And they eventually had something called Hunter, where you play humans hunting these bad guys, which Joe and I both would say we would like that.
Yes, let's do that.
That was the biggest problem I had, is I just see werewolves and vampires as opponents.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see them in wraiths and changelings as opponents, as monsters. And maybe it's just because I'm, you know, a D&D Luddite. I don't know.
Well, this is the thing. All of these creatures, their legendary origins are as evil spirits or creatures that preyed on humans.
Sorry for that mowing. Got a mower going out back. Can you hear that?
I cannot, but maybe.
Oh, good. I'm sure.
May come across on the recording. Who knows?
It may come across. Sorry, guys.
Oh, what's interesting is that when I can't hear it right now, but when you talk, it is a little superimposed over your voice.
Really? That's odd.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the same way. You play all, except for the mage one. I don't see the mage as
right.
The bad guy per se, but the evil. But
I think hunters did. I think hunters did see mages as bad guys.
Right.
Magic was evil. Yeah.
So. So that has you know, witches, you know, don't suffer witch to live kind of vibe. But as far as the others go, yeah, my inclination would not be to play them because, you know, I see them as the monsters and I don't really want to play a monster. I mean, I have, you know, every once in a while, it's probably fun as a diversion now and again, but I don't think I would want to play it as a main game.
No, definitely not. I would say if I had to rank it, it would fall into the small for me.
Yeah, probably.
I'm not sure I could even say I would play it for a while. I would say maybe medium. I mean, maybe I'd probably try. If someone would try it, I can't imagine a campaign. I couldn't do a long-term campaign. Definitely wouldn't run it. I'd love to hear from people that listen there who are fans of it or have been fans of it, the things they liked about it, and give a little more explanation as to what it was. I know I have an old Deadlands series of dime novels, little adventures. They're stories and adventures where Werewolf the Apocalypse was mixed, crossed up with the original Deadlands rules. And it's got three little cool adventures. But in general, just not my bag.
I think it would be the way I would want to play vampire is if I was turned into a vampire,
yeah,
I would want to find a way to lift it, curse if that was possible,
yep.
Or I would want to destroy my creator somehow, which I think is really difficult to do in the game. It's not impossible.
I want to go further and wipe out all the vampire race, but that's just me. All right. Yeah, that's cool. We're going to have a pretty lengthy negative, well, topic-wise, we've got four or five topics we're going to talk about in the negative plane today.
Your voice has gotten a little hard to hear.
Okay, so we're going to have a negative plane today. Four or five topics. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Much better.
Okay. All right. It was the grass mower was too close to the house.
Gotcha.
Okay. But so if you want to stick around.
I interrupted you.
And I'm interrupting you now. Perfect.
We are going to have we're having a negative plane, so stick around after the end of music or what have you, depending on whether you're watching or listening.
Cool.
So, fair warning.
Fair.
So, with that said, if you'd like to support our show, please get the word out and check out our website at biggestgeekuspodcast.com. And over at /support, you can find ways to support us other than spreading the word if that's what you want to do. But we just want you to tell your buddies about us.
Absolutely.
We are on Odyssey and YouTube. And we would appreciate a rating on Apple and wherever else you get your podcast at. Our email is thegeeks@biggestgeekestpodcast.com. Feel free to send us any questions or comments. We'd also like you to, in the show notes, we're going to have a few podcasts and the things that we like. So check those out as well. They're great. It's great stuff. So this is Joe.
I'm Randy.
And remember, if you can't be big like us, then be geeks like us. Heading into negative plane material.
We got some.
Negative material plane.
We do.
Material of a negative nature.
Correct.
So, Salvatore. Salvatore. I don't think it's E. Salvatore.
Bob Salvatore.
Yeah. Knee bending. Lots of knee bending.
Yeah.
And it might not be. That might just be where he's at.
No, he talks about, oh, in the past I used to do this, but I realized that I'm wrong. And look, he's gonna write this super just crazy progressive woke Dritz novel. You do whatever you want. But bending the knee is the wrong thing. And whether he has or not, he might be super woke anyway. I don't know. You're right. It could be that. But just the fact that he's talking about, he's like, what was that quote? If the drow are being portrayed as evil, that's a trope that has to go away. No, it doesn't.
So it says you.
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
and I got news for you. My games are not drow are going to be evil.
Yeah.
So
again, they're being portrayed as stand-ins for black people only because they're black, but they're not black like African-American people are.
Practically obsidian.
Right. And they don't have African features.
Yeah, not at all.
White hair.
And they have elven features, which none of us have.
They are elves, yes. So right, which can be whatever, I suppose, because what are elven facial features? They're normally fair skinned.
You see the cover that it looked like on the cover of that new book. What's it called? I forgot what it was. What was his book that's coming out? The Magic of the Interwebs. Let me check this out real quick. He's got a new book, Starlight Enclave. I loved how I guess it's Dritz, the drow elf on the cover of that. He looks like he's been bleached a little. Just don't get it, dude. Whatever. So
I don't either. I mean, it's
thumbs down for Salvador.
Yeah, I got tired of his books a long time ago. I read maybe three or four of them, and I was like, I don't really care for this.
Fair enough, but and I've seen the guy at Gen Con. He's funny. He's a perfectly fine dude. His opinions, political opinions, he's welcome to. But I just get – I don't respect the knee bending.
No, not at all. Yep. Not at all. Also, Jeremy Crawford. I didn't – you know, I kind of get what some folks are saying about Crawford's comments – where, you know, the books are not canon, essentially. But, again, that's your opinion. Yep. And if to you that's not canon, but he is saying a good thing, as in you play at your table the way you want to, right?
I mostly think what he said was fine, except, you know, it's clear they're pushing an agenda in their books. You say whatever you want. They're pushing, like, you know, the whole gender politics crap.
Right.
It's in the 5e books, written explicitly. And, you know, whatever. Nothing. It's like the world only starts now. He said, we consider everything canon. That's from 2014 on. But he does say, if you're looking for what's official in any role-playing game, it's what appears in the products for the role-playing game, which I agree with. Basically, our stance is that if it has not appeared in a book since 2014... 5e came out, we don't consider it canonical for the games. And if I wanted to be picky, I could, you know, tear that apart, but I won't. I really don't have a problem with the article, but I do agree with one of our buddies said, you know, it's kind of like, or even like Pundit said, which I don't think Pundit was perfect. Pundit had a response. I don't fully agree with it, but he does have a point. If anybody has a right to talk about what D&D canon is, kind of go back to Gygax. He might be the only one, him and Arneson, the ones that created it, but there is no canon really. So I'm going to give Crawford pretty much a pass. I'm not angry about it at all, but I do find it a little presumptuous of him to even say, I'm going to claim this, but you're welcome, dude. I mean, I think he's got a point at your table. Canon is what you call it. Canon is whatever you say it is at your table.
Right.
And from that viewpoint, I agreed with him. I just know, they pushed an agenda ever since it come out, and I don't care what they say. I don't know. I get to where I don't like to hear anything from them. But, you know, maybe I should should probably just shut it off altogether.
Right. I mean, I think it's possible he's trying to say everything from 2014 on, that's good, and nothing. And so he might be saying nothing before is any good. He might be trying to say that without saying it.
Which they've already said, because they want to put those warnings. They put the warnings in the drive-through books.
So you put it all together, I can see where people are coming from that are angry, but I really could care less what they have to say about.
Correct. And I'm really not angry about that.
Yeah.
I'm not angry. I don't know.
It's par for the course.
Yeah.
A lot. That's what all this is. What we're going to talk about is par for the course. This is the trajectory that many D&D or many gaming publishers are taking.
Yeah.
It's just the way. That's the way a lot of them are going.
You got another one that I think is literally embarrassing, but yeah. He-Man. Let's get to it. Kevin Smith. Dude, I loved Comic Book Men. I liked Dogma. I liked several of his other shows. Chasing Amy. Those are probably my top three that I like from him. Chasing Amy, maybe not. It was all right. It was pretty good. It was pretty cool, but it's been so long, I don't know. But I like his comic book thingy more than anything. His comic book thing. But the way he came out, I'm sorry. I don't give two craps about He-Man, dude. No. I was too old. It was not a thing for me. Agreed. Utterly dumb. But there are folks that like it. And if you're going to do He-Man, Master of the Universe, about He-Man, and you're going to claim that's what it's about He-Man, even though it leaked on Clownfish TV that it was more about Teela, from what I've seen, it is about Teela.
Yeah.
And she got the super head shaved, flopped over hair, shoulders bigger than a dude's, got her looks like her little black girlfriend in it. And apparently from what I've heard from everybody, it's He-Man gets killed in the first two thirds of the episode and it's all about Teela. She's mad because what's his name? Adam. Yeah. It was the regular version of the poor human He-Man. Didn't tell him. After he died, he's like all mad. She's all mad at his funeral. And I'm just like, dude. And Kevin Smith himself lied about it. I'm sorry, he just lied.
Yeah.
It was about Teela. It should be Teela. They had said, Teela, the new queen of the universe. Okay. But they weren't going to do that because they wouldn't get the fans.
It would be called Teela, Rage Against the Patriarchy.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Mistress of the patriarchy. You know, mistress overpowers the patriarchy. Whatever. Pick your favorite soapbox you want to stand on and your crazy title. I'm just glad it doesn't matter. They came for all, and they got Ghostbusters 2016. It's just, and they act like the fans are, well, you're just this and that because you won't like it. Even if you take away, you take away the arrogance of that statement that, oh, you must be misogynistic. Dude, you're taking somebody's childhood that they love. Mm-hmm. And you're lying to them about what you're going to produce, and then you give them a piece of hot garbage, you know? And apparently Man-at-Arms was a complete douchebag in the whole show. So
right.
I know that because I've watched some of the, you know, people like Eric July and just some guy and a few other Clownfish TV and their comments on it. As a property, I could care less.
Right.
But as a screw to the fans, yeah, that's what Kevin Smith did. I don't care what he says.
Sure thing.
And this one I caught just the other night, last minute. This is Sandy Peterson. And once again, I'm going to say, not a big Call of Cthulhu fan. Everybody knows that. But Sandy Peterson's a pretty big deal in Call of Cthulhu, the RPG for sure. And some of the silly folks, these people that get their panties in a wad no matter what you say, he made these statements. A person with the XY genome's muscle mass, regardless of declared gender, obviously in caps, because it is obvious, has an edge over the XX genome in most competitive sports. Men are generally better at sports than women. Fact. Biological fact. Instead of classifying sport participation by pronoun, why not by genome? I just want my granddaughters to be able to compete in track and field against people who don't have a genetic edge. Is that wrong? Sandy, it's not wrong.
No.
Because that's utter garbage. And I don't care what anybody says. You can talk about all these variant chromosome crap. I'm sorry. XY is more powerful than XX physically. They have advantages. I mean, somewhere in the neighborhood of women are 30% of men's upper body strength.
Yeah.
30%, dude. I mean, say whatever you want. It's not fair.
Testosterone is a powerful drug.
Yeah, and counter to what some of the bozos on Bell of Lost Brains retorted on their BS website, you know, that, oh, there's been trans athletes in Olympics since 2003. Well, currently they're saying this Lauren Huddleston or Hiddle, whatever his name is, is the first trans athlete, and he used to lift weights as a male. And they're like, well, he's probably not going to win, really. He's probably not going to win. Granted, he is old. Maybe some lady will have enough steroids in her to compete. But come on.
No. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's already got
the world record.
Now it's a record. because
he's already said it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not fair. And I say some gal does beat him. I'm going to say sweet. Just like if some that bozo that fought in MMA and that one girl that beat
him. Yeah, dude beat up a girl.
But she even said when she won, she goes, I've never been hit so hard.
Right.
You know, and she's tough, dude. She kicked my face in. Right. But it's like, you know, I just don't get it. People, it's ridiculous. And then, of course, Chaosium comes out. Trans women are women. Trans men are men. You are the only one who gets to define your gender and sexuality. Not actual physical truth. Chaosium fully supports. Yeah, so they come out against their own dude. And I don't know what's happening, if they're really going to do anything. But I just find it so disheartening, honestly, at this point.
No, I'm not.
I know. You're in a better place than me, dude.
Because this is obviously what was going to happen. If somebody says anything out of line with whatever narrative the wokesters want to put out, the whole men can all of a sudden become a woman and you have to treat them like they not only are a woman, some of them will say you have to treat them like as if they always were a woman.
You have to be attracted to them.
And you have to be attracted to them. If you're not attracted to a trans, then something's wrong.
Misogynistic. You're misogynist.
Okay. Or you're a bigot of some kind. You know,
correct.
It's par for the course. It's crazy town. The lunatics are running the asylum.
And you know,
so that's why I've stepped back.
You're so smart.
I laughed when I read this. I laughed when I read the He-Man stuff. I laughed. The same. Yeah. It's just Crawford's comments. I was like, oh, that sounds okay. And then folks on where they're more on our side were all going crazy about it.
I agree. Way too crazy.
I was like laughing at them because they're doing that. Jeremy Crawford has to toe their line.
Yeah.
No.
And even my statement about saying if anybody has a right to talk about canon and D&D as Gygax, that's still dumb. I wouldn't bet a dollar on that because honestly, I don't think D&D has canon. It's a game. It has canon at my table.
Right.
And Drow are evil at my table. Dude, they might be lawful good superheroes in yours. I don't know. But at mine, they're evil. And Dritz would be a rarity.
I posted, there's that dude that he will hand out a piece of paper to the park ranger, and it says, I do what I want. That's my license. That dude. Have you seen that meme?
No, it sounds great.
Yeah, he's got a mustache. He plays, the actor that plays him in whatever TV show it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but it's
an older guy that talks about eating steak all the time, and he was in, was it that dude that's super conservative or not? Is this somebody you see on YouTube or on a TV show?
No, it's just memes. And
it
comes from scenes from this TV show, and I don't know where it is.
The Office. No.
Not Office.
Parks and Rec. He's got the mustache. He's like, he is hilarious.
Right. So, but, you know, don't try to get him to, as an actor, own up to being that way. Because he himself said, no, don't mistake my acting for the way I am. He's pretty much a lefty too. Anyway, the memes are awesome. And the one I liked the most was, I do what I want. So I don't care what any of these people say I'm supposed to do at my table. I do what I want.
Yeah. I mean, look.
And I don't make a big fuss about it.
Nope.
I think I've been pretty vocal in the past in the limited scope that I have had, but you know, who cares?
It serves no purpose.
No.
You're right.
I don't like any of this stuff, to be sure. And Battle of Lost Souls is a bunch of, and they don't even know how to write, to be honest. Many of their articles are.
We've proven that. With the articles we've linked, they've had tons of errors in there.
Yeah, they're not like very good writers.
They look like sixth graders.
Yeah.
But having said that, that's whatever. And, you know, our buddy Andy, our number one fan, he's right. Maybe he's right. Maybe we should just stop talking about the whole negative
point. It's fine to talk about it, but I think from the right point, the perspective of these guys, don't be surprised at any of this stuff. Try not to get your panties in a wad.
Yeah.
No, don't cry about it.
Hold on. I'm going to put my panties out of my wad.
Don't get your panties in a wad. Make long Facebook posts about how awful everything is.
I ain't doing that.
I think it's what it really deserves. Is derision.
Yes.
And and satire and laughter and calling them stupid, but don't get too mad about it.
No,
because
and they're probably just deluded. So
somehow they've gotten the license to make this stuff, and whether they whatever they've decided to do with it, I don't like. That's why I'm still not excited about what is it? The Ghostbusters thing?
No, I'm worried about that, and I'm not too.
Is it on surface? It looks like they've gone the inclusivity route. So I don't know.
Maybe they won't smash it in our face at least.
Maybe they won't.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to the theaters to find out.
I'll wait for other people to say stuff, and then. Yeah. Not that I'll go on their word necessarily, but if you see it and you say, "Oh, you don't want to watch it," I'll trust that.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see.
Nothing from Hollywood, nothing from the big game designers. None of it interests me because it's all going to be loaded with this crap.
Yeah.
So, I've made my peace.
Good. I'm not there, but I'll get there. I'll get there. And one day we'll have a non-negative plan. We'll be all peace and puppy dogs.
It'll just be us laughing. I don't mind bringing this stuff up.
There you go.
We'll just laugh at him. It's stupid.
We should do this. We should have done this. Kevin Smith. Those that lost their mind over Jeremy Crawford. And just record us laughing. That would be hilarious. Yeah, that'd probably be good enough.
Maybe the Beavis and Butthead laughter.
Yeah. Look at us. Practice. We should be professionals.
We're owed.
All right, man. I think I'm good with that.
Are we good? Is that a wrap?
I think it's a wrap, man.
All right.
Peace out.